Alexa Bliss has a career night, Bobby Lashley versus Keith Lee, easily the match of the night, and The Fiend targets Randy Orton. All this and so much more in our Monday Night Raw review. Let's get things going right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Because Stone Cold said so.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the WWE Podcast. It is Tuesday, November 24th, 2020. As man, oh man, we inch closer and closer to 2021. It is only a month and a week away. Crazy. I don't know why. This month has felt faster than any month so far this year, bar none. I don't know what it is about November that has just completely flown by. I don't know if it's the election nonsense or all of the wrestling stuff going on, just general chaos, right? So I don't know, but hopefully your November is going well and there's a week left of it and hopefully you make the best of it. But tonight we're here to talk about Monday Night Raw. But before we do that, I do want to let you know tomorrow night I'm doing my Make Good live show, and that'll be taking place on Blog Talk Radio. And if you go to Blog Talk Radio and you don't know, like if I post the link and it doesn't work for you or whatever, head on over to Blog Talk Radio and just search for the WWE Podcast. Super easy. I'm doing this live show tomorrow, Wednesday, November 25th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So whatever time zone you're in, calibrate it to 8:30 Eastern Standard Time and you'll be able to call in. In fact, it starts in 22 hours and 25 minutes exactly. So, at least from this recording time that I'm looking at my countdown right now. The number to call in for the show. Again, this is separate from my voicemail, which I'm still doing, and I will still answer questions tomorrow night. The guest call-in number, that's you guys, is 516-387-1528. So, that is the number. Start calling at 8:30. Again, we're going to be talking about anything this week in wrestling. I know it's not a week in review, but up to this point. So we have Survivor Series that we can talk about. We can talk about Monday Night Raw. If you'd like, questions, comments, concerns, whatever comes to your mind wrestling-wise, that is what this show is for. So looking forward to seeing everyone there. Hopefully you can make it. If not, of course, the show will be made available on Blog Talk Radio under the feed, but also, of course, under the main feed that you find the show anywhere that you are listening to us now. That show will appear that night. So typically I do a wrestling nostalgia, but in lieu of that, I think it's time to talk about Undertaker, right? Like, that's kind of nostalgic. We can talk about Undertaker. We can talk about Monday Night Raw, Survivor Series, whatever you'd like. But in place of nostalgia, I'm going to be doing a kind of a caller show. It's kind of a show for you guys. So hopefully you join me. If not, look, I mean, I can still ramble on about what's going on in wrestling. So that's tomorrow's agenda. So Monday Night Raw last night. Now, I don't know if I was in a better mood. I don't know if it's actually the WWE product. I'm not sure what it is. Maybe it's a combination of things. But last night's show, I really enjoyed. I did. I mean, I really enjoyed Monday Night Raw last night. And, of course, not everything, right? Like, the beginning of the show was as just the typical terrible start to a wrestling show that WWE occasionally will pull out of their hat to start the show. And that is the single file, everyone stands in a line and we get the fire face crap. And we get all the nicknames and the very, 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 very red promo by Adam Pearce that you could tell he was just kind of reciting in his mind. And look, Matt Riddle, who I want to get into later. And yes, we still refer to him as Matt Riddle here. I want to get into him a little bit later. Because this dude is, his character is really souring on me. Not in ring. We all know how good he is in ring. It's the other half, the more important half, I would argue, is the personality, the charisma, the persona, the gimmick, whatever label you put on it. That to me is more important than in the ring. I know some people may disagree, but I really want to talk about that in just a couple of minutes. But again, Monday Night Raw, I really, really enjoyed, again, outside of that first segment, which was just straight trash. Other than Braun Strowman hitting Adam Pearce, which is nice to see somebody laying out Adam Pearce. Like, I can't stand Adam Pearce at all. He's not trying to be a heel. And maybe that's what makes me dislike him more. That's naturally who he is on camera. I know he's trying to be this neutral authority figure. I understand that. But he, to me, is such a heel D-bag. I can't stand Adam Pearce. The way he talks, his mannerisms, everything. And I'm not saying to have him go off my TV. I just want to see him get laid out. And to me, I don't know. Was that really a heel move by Braun Strowman? Really? I mean, and furthermore, Braun Strowman tweeted out something about how this whole place is politics and, you know, you're all going to pay or something like that. And there's some rumors and people out there thinking that he could join Retribution. And I would say, please, dear Lord, no. Please do not have Braun Strowman join Retribution. I don't miss Retribution. I don't look for Retribution. If they're not on a Monday Night Raw, I don't feel like I'm losing out on something. So if that's the plan, why don't we pump the brakes a bit? Braun Strowman does not need to be part of a group. Braun Strowman is, I think, a much better single star than he is in a group. So, like I said, though, Monday Night Raw, I enjoyed for the most part. I really did. And you may be saying, what did you enjoy about it? You know, I didn't like it so much. It felt kind of like a standard Raw. Well, first and foremost, and I guess it's kind of a tie, neck and neck, in terms of what I enjoyed the most. But surprisingly, I think what surprised me the most that I liked was Bobby Lashley versus Keith Lee. That, to me, was it wasn't a five-star classic in terms of what today's definition of that is, which is super high-flying, constant movement, no selling, just move after counter, which is not my thing. This, to me, was just a good story inside the ring. Two huge guys, one very muscular, one just bigger. I mean, like, let's be honest, Keith Lee is a little bit more body fat on him, and he just does, but still heavy nonetheless. And seeing these two go at it, it felt like Bobby Lashley was really just putting in the extra effort. He got busted open the hard way. I think it was on the shot to the ring post. He kind of clipped his head and was bleeding the hard way. That's always a beautiful thing to see, and I'm not advocating for the safety of the wrestlers to be in jeopardy. That's not what I'm saying, but I'm saying when it happens in a safe way, as safe as it possibly could happen, it's a beautiful thing, isn't it? Blood is a beautiful thing in wrestling. It's a way to paint the canvas, so to speak, and to tell a story that often is and cannot be used in a PG environment. But damn, when it is used accidentally, it makes things just more dramatic. And so, obviously, what was on the line here, though, was the opportunity for the winner to go to the triple threat match next week, and the winner of that match would face Drew McIntyre for the WWE Championship. And this match, I mean, again, it felt like just extra effort on both men's part. I loved it. I really, really did. And the feat of strength that Bobby Lashley showed, picking this guy up on his shoulders with like ease almost, was super impressive. The suplex that he almost did, if anyone noticed, a stalling vertical suplex, almost. It was like for that split second on Keith Lee. That was so impressive. I mean, I can't imagine the type of and kind of strength that Bobby Lashley has. The leapfrog that Keith Lee did, like what? It was just all around extremely well done. I'm actually glad that they didn't have a clean finish on this one. I was advocating for not a clean finish because I don't want to see Bobby Lashley lose. He is the United States champion, and he's been on a roll big time as of late in the Hurt Business. And he's really the muscle of the Hurt Business. And Keith Lee, of course, who's undefeated, you don't want him taking a big loss either. So it made sense to have this kind of screwy finish where Keith Lee drops Lashley, all of his weight on Lashley's ribs. And then we have MVP come in, cause the DQ, and that to me made a lot of sense. It also put heat on MVP and made you want to see these two fight again because we didn't get a conclusion. I was getting into this match. I don't know what I was thinking or doing at the time, but maybe nobody else feels this way. I was really into this. really into it. And they brought me in, and, you know, congrats to both men. I hope we see this again in the near future. MVP continues to just shine as the mouthpiece of the Hurt Business. He's the glue that holds everyone together and everything together, and is a perfect manager slash wrestler slash mouthpiece that can excel and promote the Hurt Business. So very well done on all fronts of this match. That really was a massive positive. Another massive positive to me, and this is again neck and neck with the Keith Lee Bobby Lashley match, is Alexa Bliss. I mean, she was woven throughout the show, but I didn't get sick of her. And I'm not saying to weave her throughout the show every single week, because that does wear thin quickly. But in this instance, she is just a perfect fit with this role. And Nikki Cross, to her credit also, was a perfect fit for her role in trying to be that friend that did everything she could to unhypnotize Alexa Bliss, to know what's best for her, to try to snap her out of it. And Alexa Bliss, or Nikki Cross, says, you know, look, I've tried everything. I'm going to beat the Fiend out of her. I mean, she was fired up. I believed her. So Nikki Cross, again, gets credit here. And during their match, it was also just well done. The story in the ring here, very, very, very good. You had Nikki Cross, who was just laying it into Alexa Bliss, clothesline. And then Alexa Bliss would kind of smile. Clothesline, Alexa Bliss would smile. Not that she would no-sell it. There's a difference, right? There's a difference between no-selling and being able to show your emotions while you're getting beat up and tell that story. And that's what Alexa Bliss did here. She didn't fiend the thing where she didn't sell something. She just, when she'd get knocked down or kicked, she'd look like she's in pain and then smile through that pain, right? And the little wave she does under her chin, it's fitting. It's growing on me. I wasn't a huge fan of it at first, but it's starting to, I think, fit in pretty well with her character. I love what they've done her with her and her hair and her outfit and just her contacts that she puts in when you know, she's in the Firefly Funhouse. It's all beautiful. It's really just a beautiful thing to watch when wrestling works, isn't it? And then we got the Roman Reigns finish here from the last pay-per-view, where Roman was pulling on the heartstrings of Jey Uso and Jimmy Uso and pretending like, hey, what have I become? What's happened? And almost like they've just kind of feigned a epiphany moment, just to lure that person in to be vulnerable and to then just snap on them again. It was a beautiful thing. She did the Roman Reigns finish, but still beautiful. I know we just saw it a little over a month or a month and a half ago, but it's a perfect way to tell the story that Alexa Bliss is truly changed, that she's not just kind of faking this or that she might turn back, but that she truly is evil now through and through because of the Fiend. So it was a great thing to have her get lured in, Nikki get lured in, and then boom, a modified, I'll call it modified. I love that word too. Modified, whenever a move doesn't quite go the way that it should, the announcers cover by saying modified, because when a move doesn't go exactly according to plan, it's just modified. And I guess that's true, but that's what she hit, a modified Sister Abigail for the win over Alexa, or over Nikki Cross. And it was just a great, great thing to see. And Alexa and Nikki Cross continue to probably bring this all the way to TLC. I have no reason to believe that these two won't be facing one another at TLC. I think it's a perfect match. I also like how Alexa Bliss is not just the sidekick of Bray Wyatt. Like, she is her own woman. She's got her own story with Nikki. And hopefully others as things evolve and she moves away from Nikki Cross, which is inevitable. But I like that. I like how Alexa Bliss isn't just exclusively tied to The Fiend as part of the Funhouse and accompanying him to his matches, but that she has her own story going on that is attached to The Fiend as well. And that's important. That's really good to see. The other thing, too, is Alexa Bliss's music that is just killer. I'm a huge fan of that kind of dark-toned original theme that she had, that every time that the bass hits, the Fiend's eyes pop up on the screen. It's great stuff. I mean, this is just brilliant stuff. It is as good as it can be with no fans in the arena. This is as good as wrestling probably is going to get, as far as storyline quality, until fans are back. So that's how I feel. But let me know what you guys think. Are you as into Alexa Bliss and the Fiend as I am, as particularly Alexa Bliss's role? Because we know what the Fiend is. We've seen Bray Wyatt's Funhouse, and also Alexa Bliss crushing the Frog on the Firefly Funhouse. The Friendly Frog, I think it was. And I actually laughed out loud after Alexa Bliss squished him when Bray Wyatt said to Alexa Bliss that, you know, it's too bad that he croaked. I actually laughed. I haven't laughed in a long time at wrestling genuinely when it was supposed to be funny. Like, not kind of ironically, but genuinely funny. That actually made me laugh. But I guess it depends on your sense of humor. That was great. And it seemed like Bray Wyatt legitimately was laughing too. Like, not just his fake kind of cackle that he does all the time. But it seemed there was a little bit of real laughter in there. So it was just entertaining all around. The Firefly Funhouse with Alexa Bliss continues to just shine. I'm a big fan. And hopefully this is something that continues for the foreseeable future. I don't see any need to break them up. I don't see any need to have a storyline to snap her out of it with some kind of antidote. No, none of that. None of it. This is brilliant stuff. And I'm interested to see eventually what the total end game is, right? Because Alexa Bliss, can she really be this forever? And when I'm saying forever, I mean, like, you know, like after this has kind of run its course, can Alexa Bliss kind of go back to what she was? You would think at some point she will, a year, maybe more. But this is just great while it lasts. So props to everybody involved there. Execution, story, Nikki Cross, everyone. I mean, so, you know, hey, I don't know the last time that I started out a Monday Night Raw review this positive. I don't. I really don't. And to continue on the positivity, because I do have, again, the riddle thing, I have some choice words for that. But to continue on this wave of positivity, I feel like I'm honorary member of the New Day here, which I would never be because I can't stand the New Day, but pun intended is what I'm going for. The Fiend targets Orton. He finally takes that path to Orton, and they've been teasing it for several weeks, and now we finally get it. And the Fiend didn't actually touch Orton, but during his match to end Raw, where he was facing AJ Styles, and the winner would go to the Triple Threat to eventually face McIntyre for the WWE Championship, the Fiend interfered by appearing underneath the barricade, or just above the barricade, and then once again on the apron to scare Randy Orton. And actually, did anybody else catch this? After the Fiend popped up the first time, and the lights went back down, and the camera panned only to one side, if you noticed. It only panned to one side. It didn't look back the other way, because that's where Bray Wyatt was running to his next spot. But about halfway through, about 30 seconds after that happened and the lights came back on, you saw Bray Wyatt jump the barricade to come back into the ringside area. Did anybody else catch this? It was blatantly on camera. I mean, it's almost as bad as, accidentally seeing The Undertaker running up the ramp to do his disappearing act, right? Like, I don't want to see it. Don't pull back the curtain. I think it was obviously unintentional, but whoever was editing the Hulu version, or if WWE didn't care, Bray Wyatt was clearly seen jumping the barricade in the distance. It wasn't supposed to be seen. That's how I know it wasn't. Jumping the barricade to come back into the ringside area so that his second spot, he could appear on the apron. So again, I'm not angry about that. I mean, it's just, that's how obviously it happens. He doesn't truly have teleporting powers, not to my knowledge. So it was just one of those just production mistakes. So, but hey, I'm not mad about it, or I'm not going to rant about it. But we do have finally a solid program now for Randy Orton beyond Drew McIntyre. And I think the Fiend needs Randy Orton too. The question, too, is who's playing the babyface? You would think Bray Wyatt. I would still believe it's Bray Wyatt because Randy Orton as a babyface is not as fun, nearly as fun. So Bray Wyatt here is targeting Orton, and he made that kind of clear during the Firefly Funhouse when there was a quick flashback and of the Randy Orton burning down the cabin in the woods where Sister Abigail's ashes were laid to rest, I guess. And the burning, the audio of the burning, the screaming lady who was on fire. I mean, like, they hinted towards it. And Orton here in Fiend should be fun. I truly believe, though, this will be the final program for Orton before Edge comes back. That is my best guess. Because this could just be a one-off to TLC with Orton and the Fiend. And come Royal Rumble, because that's what's next. You have Edge come in to surprise Randy Orton and maybe debut at number 21 again. The Rumble is going to be a super interesting pay-per-view this year. And I know I'm getting a month ahead of myself, but it's going to be really interesting because we have Edge returning. We have a returning Charlotte, presumably, on the women's side. There's rumors of call-ups. This is going to be a really interesting Rumble. And I really hope and pray that it is in front of live, warm-blooded human beings. I really do. It's an event that absolutely needs it. And they're going to Tropicana Field in Tampa. So it's a different place. It's a different place. So, you know, I know yesterday I said that it's a open field or an open roof. And it can be. I forgot they have a retractable roof. So it can be. They can open and they can close it. So that's a perfect venue if you have rain or you just want to open it and say that it's a safer environment because it's open air and there's less chance of contracting the virus. I mean, that's what it's all about, right? So new venue screams the possibility of actual people there because you have more space. I said this on a podcast. Oh my gosh, I don't know. I've been doing so many over the last week. A few days ago, I'll leave it at that, where if Tropicana Field can hold, say, I don't know, 50,000, 80,000 people, and an arena can hold 20 to 30, well, then you've doubled or tripled your capacity, which means if you have a capacity of, say, 10%, if, say, the Department of Health in Florida, the State Health Department, whatever it is, they say, okay, you can do it, 10% capacity. Well, 10% capacity at a higher capacity venue equals more people. So hopefully they're able to do this in some kind of safe manner where people have to wear masks, they still have to socially distance, and you can have people there actually live reacting to the Rumble. The Rumble is going to be really difficult to watch if no one can be there. And I know they're doing a great job of pumping in crowd noise, and I understand that, and I'm appreciative of that. But being able to do it live, there's nothing like it. And here the fans count down. Even 15,000 people in an arena that holds 80,000 will still make noise. I mean, I watch baseball, and when the Yankees go to Tampa, I'm a Yankees fan, obviously, but when they go to Tampa and there's not that many people in the building, you can still hear it. It's a very acoustically friendly building, particularly if they close the roof. That'll help conceal some of the noise in the building. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But okay, let's get to something that, good grief, I am not a fan of. That's Matt Riddle's personality. I've said this a couple of times, and I'm borderline ranting on Matt Riddle here. Well, number one, they took Matt away from his name. I'm gonna guess I'm a little bit rough around the edges on that one for obvious reasons. But beyond that silly reason, this is a guy that we're supposed to relate to. We're supposed to find funny and laid back and cool. Is that what this is? Is that the personality that Vince McMahon thinks he's portraying on TV to millions of people? Is this kind of cool surfer dude who just is here to have a good time and make jokes? Again, I'm putting aside his in-ring work. It is very good. That's not the problem. So if somebody comes back to me and says, what are you talking about? Matt Riddle's awesome. Do you see what he does in the ring? I'm not talking about in ring. It's his personality only. So I want to make that distinction. This guy with his fire face jokes, which is just awful. Can we get off fire face? I'm like secondhand embarrassed. Anybody else know what I'm talking about when I say that? The term secondhand embarrassed means I feel embarrassed for him and I feel embarrassed watching the product. Even though I'm watching it alone, I feel embarrassed. Anybody else feel that? That's how silly this is when he says fireface or any of his very middle school jokes. Okay, it's not funny. It's actually really kind of immature. I mean, you're a guy that is a legitimate MMA credentialed athlete. He's a legit badass, great in the ring, and he's making jokes about giving people nicknames. It's embarrassing. There's no other way to put it. And look, I know these are strong opinions on Matt Riddle, and I'm high on his in-ring stuff, but I don't know how you portray this guy as a babyface. I just don't know. I have no idea how you do it. I just don't see the redeemable, likable qualities in this character. Tell me what they are. He's not funny. That's for damn sure. I know that sense of humor is a subjective thing. Everyone has their own, and some people find certain things funny while others don't. I understand that. But I don't see anyone laughing, right? Like, I don't hear about how great he is a comedy, and I don't get great feedback from fans that listen to this show and others about how great he is, and I love his personality. It's always about his in-ring work. Always. Because it's the only good thing about this character. I don't need also a slow-mo every time of him flipping off his shoes, like he just walked out of a frat house and he's going to a pool party, right? Like, I don't need that. He's like the guy that never grew up and grew out of college. That's how he comes across. He's the D-bag that can't get over college. That's who he is. He's a guy that's hanging on to being about a president of his fraternity, where he's just kind of was like, oh, they're my brothers, man. They're my bros. He's like, totally. I can't stand it. Anybody? I mean, am I? I hope I'm really not ruining Matt Riddle for some of you. But his personality is, it's skin crawling. That is the best term that I can come up with. His personality is skin crawling. And maybe he can open his eyes during, while he's having a conversation or during a promo. I mean, can he please just open his eyes? Anybody else catch that too? This is just obnoxious. The guy's an obnoxious, like a wannabe college frat boy that makes my skin crawl. All these colorful adjectives here. Every time I hear him speak. And yeah, he's got kind of a lisp on top of it. I mean, look, it's what it is. I'm not, whatever. People have speech impediments. Fine. But it doesn't help. He's kind of got the Jake Hager or Jack Swagger in WWE version of that lisp he's got. And I don't know. Like, his whole bro thing. He has to call everyone bro 100,000 times, right? Like, everyone's bro, bro this, bro that. He comes up with dumb nicknames. He's just the guy that kind of, again, he's the frat boy who never left college, kind of smokes weed on the side, kind of chills on his couch, and just kind of, like, hangs out there and eats Cheetos. And again, I know he's obviously in a tremendous shape, but that's the personality I'm getting. Ugh, I can't handle it. I bet you won't hear that on any other podcast, right? Everyone's probably only talking about, great match. Oh, he did a great match. He's great in the ring. No. Like, why are we ignoring his personality that is absolutely unwatchable? Maybe it's appealing to some people out there. Maybe it is, but I don't know what specifically makes this guy so likable as a babyface. Now, if this guy was a heel, I could buy this a little more. Because then I legitimately want to see someone just, like, flatten him. And that's a good thing. I want to feel that because I would pay to see someone do that, and that's the objective. That's the objective if you're WWE. So I think maybe a miscast and also misunderstood by Vince McMahon, who called WWE WWF on Survivor Series. I mean, has anybody ever referenced WWE as WWF since WWE became WWE? Has that ever happened? I don't think so. And then Vince comes out, and I know that he was introducing The Undertaker. But, and he, I know he's also referencing back then when he was Undertaker in the WWF. I understand. But nobody says WWF. It's almost as if WWF never existed. It's WWE. Then, now, and forever. Apparently, it wasn't then. Oh, Vince. And look, Vince McMahon looks just... Every time I see Vince, every time I see him, it looks finally like Father Time is laying down Vince McMahon. Like, and I don't mean he's going to die, okay? Like, I don't mean that. I'm not that morbid. But every time I see Vince McMahon, I always kind of look to see... What does he look like? What does his hair look like? Is he dyeing his hair? Apparently, he pencils in his eyebrows. I mean, something's there. Like, I mean, it's kind of weird. How he talks, that has seriously slowed. He doesn't have that same energy he did. The Vince McMahon that we all know, he doesn't have that same energy, the same wit. He doesn't have the same kind of volume in his voice, the bass in his voice that he used to have on the microphone. I don't know what it is, but I think it is just Father Time finally coming down to put Vince McMahon in his place that even Vince McMahon can't avoid. So maybe that's what it is. But okay, so let's move on from Matt Riddle. Okay, let's move on to Lana. Lana, who. Was excited and said that this was the best day of her career when she was interviewed and that she's going to just take it all in. You know, she was asked by, forgive me for the announcer's name, or the interviewer's name, I can't remember. It wasn't Kayla Braxton, it was, I can't remember. So she asked Lana about being in a women's championship match. Is that what's next? And Lana says, oh, I don't know about that. And kind of being a little bit shy, being a little bit subdued about it, being just kind of really putting that under the rug for now. And that was that. And then you see Lana and Asuka interact. And Asuka didn't take no for an answer and just gave Lana a women's championship match. Just kind of gave it to her. There's two schools of thought here. The first school of thought is that this is great because it shows that Asuka's a fighting champion. That's what Vince is just dead set on, having everybody be a babyface champion. Everyone that's a babyface champion is a fighting champion. And damn it, I'm going to be so transparent about that. It makes me sick. But so there's that. There's also the school of thought that what the hell is she doing to give Lana a championship match? It devalues the championship itself. I understand that it's, ooh, a women's championship match. Well, first of all, how many times have we seen the women's championship defended on Raw over the last few months? The answer, a lot. That's the answer. I don't want to see it defended a lot on Raw or defended a lot at all. I know that you have a babyface champion. I understand that. But you are sacrificing the value of the championship, any championship, doesn't matter which one, by constantly defending it, making championship matches constantly, and making it feel like anyone could just get an opportunity just by asking or attacking you. Because that's the narrative that they've sold us for many years. That is what we've been educated to believe by WWE Creative. We all know that the whole method, and I've said this for years on this show, is that all you have to do is attack the champion and you get an opportunity at the championship. Doesn't matter which one, you just flatten the champion, and boom. Next thing you know, you're awarded an opportunity. It's just such backward logic. I mean, you could just have that champion say, you're not getting a shot at my title, but damn it, I'm going to whoop your ass. Problem solved. I mean, so there's that. For those people that are out there thinking, well, if someone attacks the champion, don't they want their revenge? Yeah, they do, and they should. But that doesn't mean they should reward the person attacking them with an opportunity at the championship they struggled to get. So there's that. And again, how many opportunities have we seen Asuka give away? Makes no sense. None. I don't understand why Lana was deserving of a championship opportunity. What did she do? Same with Zelina Vega. And I am a huge Zelina Vega fan. Obviously no longer in WWE, but when she was here, I was a huge, huge fan of hers and always hoped and wished and prayed that she was going to be women's champion for a long time and have a massive heel run. But clearly that was a pipe dream. And no disrespect to Zelina Vega, but she was newly in the singles column in her career and was awarded an opportunity like right away. Well, that makes that takes the championship and makes it feel like, well, it's not that special, right? You don't have to be here for years and, you know, cut your teeth and grind away and scratch and claw. You just kind of, you walk in, you're new. Come on, let's get it. You earned an opportunity. Let's go. It's just sad. You see this with not just the women's championship, but with a lot of other ones out there too. I mean, again, championships, I don't think WWE takes that seriously in terms of being the most important. And as Steve Austin always says, if you're not here for championships, what the hell are you here for? If you're not here to be the man or the woman, what are you here for? You know? So, okay, I'm going to get off that rant because that's a deep, dark rabbit hole. And let's get to the next item here that happened on Monday Night Raw. And that is, let's take a look here. Well, Braun Strowman headbutting Adam Pearce at the beginning of Raw. I kind of touched on this already. But he headbutted him out of anger. Okay. Fine. You know, again, I love seeing Adam Pearce get his ass kicked. But does everyone, after the Raw Survivor Series win, does everyone need to stand single file line? Or can we just go like, okay, can we move on from Survivor Series? Survivor Series is nothing more than a hiatus for all storylines. All storylines go out the window because we're all just supposed to fight for the brand. It's stupid. But, you know, I don't know why they're still friends. Can we stop standing in single file line like good little schoolboys and girls, please? Can we move on? Apparently we can't. And what's even weirder about this story was that Adam Pearce wanted to reward the participants on the team with an opportunity for a shot at the WWE Championship. Fair enough. I actually like the logic. I actually think that's smart. The only problem I have with it is that, to Adam Pearce's own words, after he got headbutted and we had him try to get interviewed how many times by Charlie Caruso, getting interrupted by Randy Orton, getting interrupted by Bobby Lashley, you had Adam Pearce say, well, you know, talking's not going to get it done. We settle things in the ring. Well, what the hell are you asking them for to make a case for themselves? Because that's what he wanted to do at the beginning of Raw. He told them to make a case for yourself for an opportunity of the WWE Championship. Well, he even told you afterwards that words aren't, you know, going to cut it and we settle things in the ring. Again, so what the hell are we doing, Pierce? Like, what are we doing? This is where simple proofreading of a script would just benefit Raw, right? Oh, it's just silly. But nonetheless, I actually like how it's kind of a mini tournament. The winners of their singles matches get put in a triple threat. We've seen this formula before, but I'm all for it. It makes sense. It, I think, puts an emphasis on a sense of urgency on these matches. And it is it also creates a new opponent, presumably, for Drew McIntyre. And that's a good thing. All right. We also had a Raw Tag Team Championship match, New Day versus the Hurt Business, Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin. And, I mean, I don't know what to say. This is always, I mean, you know what you're going to get quality-wise. It's very, very good. I have nothing to say about it. We got a predictable ending of the champions still being the New Day after Woods rolls up Benjamin. And, yep, we got the dreaded roll-up. Oh, but don't worry, we get more roll-ups during Raw, so that's a thing. Like, roll-ups are just how we end things. Now we can't ever have the confidence to have somebody lose clean because, damn it, then how do we back out of it? So we got to do the coward booking of roll-ups. It's cowardly by creative. There's no other way to put it. Grow a set. Okay. But yeah, so there you go. Another championship match on Raw. Does WWE understand what they're doing by doing by creating more championship opportunities and matches on Raw? Do they get it? It's, to me, nothing more than a crutch. It's a crutch because they don't have good stories. They have to rely on superficial matches that just, well, it's a championship match. It's got to be important. No, it doesn't, because why are these two individuals fighting? That's why people care. Because then the characters that they're invested in, that is, if the characters are chasing something that is important and you're invested in the character, then what they're chasing must be important and therefore you care. But, I mean, it's very simple. Okay, and I promise, I know I said at the beginning of the show that I really did like Monday Night Raw, and I did. This, I guess, just speaks to larger issues. These are just kind of like little microcosms of larger issues I have with wrestling today. Not particularly Monday Night Raw. Again, Monday Night Raw was really good. And this match with New Day and the Hurt Business was also really good. I have nothing to complain about wrestling quality-wise. It's just kind of like basic storytelling logic, folks. Okay. Moving down the line here. We did get Lana versus Asuka in a women's championship match on Raw because Lana was forced into it. And we got it, and it was fine. It didn't last long because we had Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler at ringside. And Asuka ends up pouring water on Nia Jax, and, you know, that's what caused the DQ, because it's almost as if Asuka got kind of intentionally disqualified here, but obviously that's not the case. So Asuka won the match, retains the championship, but you see the predictability here, and that's fine. That's fine. A tag team match between Lana and Asuka versus Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. It was, I think the logic here was pretty good, or at least the psychology in this match was pretty good. Lana showing a little bit of fire. That's what I've been looking for. A little bit of fire. Not the way in which I would have booked it, but fire nonetheless. You know, that's not just rolling over and dying. That's what I was concerned about, and we didn't get it. And that, you know, what we saw in Survivor Series and what we saw the last, like, you know, 8 weeks prior to that, it was just shameful what they were doing with Lana. And I know they're trying to gain sympathy for this character, that they're trying to get the fans behind her after all the heel tactics she's been portrayed in, and all the heel roles she's been portrayed in with Bobby Lashley and Rusev, everything else, Dolph Ziggler at one point. That they're trying to do damage control here and really, really kind of weed out any hatred you have for this character and replace it with sympathy by seeing her go through a table week after week after week and kind of being a little bit humble and being kind of shy and everything else that, you know, with the complete opposite of what we saw from her over the last, you know, how many years. So this tag team match ends up with Asuka and Lana winning, because here we go. Baszler was distracted and got rolled up, giving the win to Asuka and Lana. Good grief is all I have to say about this. I mean, the finish. How many roll-ups do we have to do? Ugh. But it was a, I guess that's the WWE creative way of saying fluke victory, fluke victory. Anytime there's a roll-up, it's fluke, it's fluke, it's a fluke. But it angered Nia Jax, who looked legitimately pissed off, so good acting or good facials by her. And it also set up another encounter between these four. And I want to see it. I mean, I do. I have no, you know, as much as I argued for Lana to go away, and I did, and I stand by it, what they've done here is at least keep me interested in the Nia Jax-Lana interaction. I am interested in it to see, you know, how much longer Lana can take this before she snaps. And she's, I guess, snapped. And now, can she somehow repay the favor to Nia Jax putting her through a table? And what is Nia Jax going to do when she finally gets her hands on Lana for getting this fluke victory? You know, that is what I'm most interested in. And to be honest, like, why is Nia Jax angry at Lana from Survivor Series? She did exactly what she was, quote, told by mommy and daddy. And she ended up only winning because Nia Jax got counted out with Bianca Belair, right? So there's nobody else to be mad at but yourself. Lana did exactly what you said. She just happened to be there getting the victory because you got counted out. So I don't know. Maybe that's just the heel way of doing things. But all right. We also got, again, the thank you Taker thing. The thank you Taker, which, you know, it's tough to see Taker go. I said this in my Raw review or my Survivor Series review that I don't think this is the last time we're seeing Taker. I think it's the last match we've seen from Taker. I'll be shocked if we get a Fiend Undertaker match now. I'll be literally floored. But based on everything I saw, it is very poetic that Undertaker begins and ends his career at Survivor Series. It's very poetic, 30 years. It's certainly a nice round number, and it does make sense that he does lay the Undertaker to rest in the same place that the Undertaker was created. It's very, very, very poetic. So I will literally be shocked. I would give it like a next to nothing chance. I wouldn't give it impossible. I wouldn't give it impossible, but boy, oh boy, would I really would be shocked if it happened at this point. So, but it was a nice tribute. It really was. And again, this is not the last time we'll see him. It's the last time we'll see him, you know, in ring in a match. Doesn't mean he can't come out and do a choke slam every now and then. Doesn't mean that. Or a tombstone. I'm sure he'll do it. Just kind of like Austin does, pops in from time to time, hits a stunner, hits some beer, and calls it a day. I mean, I could see Undertaker doing a similar thing, a similar type of popping in and out. That's what I can foresee. What else is happening here? I'm looking through my notes. I think that pretty much does it. Again, the ending with Oscar or the Fiend and Orton. I think that's a very telltale sign of where they're going. And it's certainly going to be interesting to see what they play on that. And I like how the Fiend is consistent in not only changing people, but also the stories and why he's attacking who he's attacking, right? It's not just kind of willy-nilly. It makes sense. There are people from his past that have done him wrong. He's on a vengeance tour, which is would have been perfect for The Undertaker, given what happened with them at WrestleMania 31. So, alrighty. Well, guys, I think that does it for me tonight for your Monday Night Raw review. Don't forget, tomorrow, 8:30 Eastern Standard Time, you can call in. We can talk about Survivor Series. We can talk about Monday Night Raw. We can talk about, you know, TLC upcoming, Royal Rumble upcoming, WrestleMania, if you want to go out that far. 516-387-1528. And once you call, you have to press 1 on your phone if you want to get in. Unless you just want to listen, that's cool too. But if you press 1, I'll know that you're in the switchboard to come on the show. So I'm looking forward to talking with everyone tomorrow night. I will also be answering voicemails tomorrow night. It'll be kind of a dual show where I'll do the live portion. And then once I do my editing, I'll put in the voicemails and answer the voicemails that way. So it's going to be a fun little show, a fun show. Looking forward to it. And that'll round out my week of this long week of wrestling podcasts, at least for myself. Obviously, tons more content coming on the feed with SmackDown review with Michael Ritter and your NXT review with Zach Smith and you know, New Japan Pro Wrestling. And then it starts again in my we also have the debut of the WWE Highs and Lows with Mimi Burris, who was on my show last Saturday, 2 days ago. Jeez, I'm losing it. 3 days ago. Whatever the hell Saturday was. I swear, guys, I don't even know what day it is anymore. Like, I'm so tired. But that is what we'll be doing. So Saturday night or Sunday night, we'll be debuting Mimi's brand new podcast of WWE's Highs and Lows. So that's going to be a blast. Alrighty, guys. Thank you so much for joining me. Please consider subscribing and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. It does help us out in the rankings and everything else. Tell a friend if you like us, and I will talk to you next time.